Welcome to the Sons of Mjolnir podcast.
The Sons of... what?
This isn't your Sons of Macaroni, yeah!
The Sons of Mjolnir?
This is Sons of Mjolnir,
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Sons of Mjolnir. As always, I am your host, Fat Thor. Unfortunately, Cap and Gorgon could not make this episode, but I am joined by a very, very special guest. You may remember him from our last episode that we did. Good friend of the show and artist of Immortal Thor, Martin Kokolo. Martin, thank you so much for coming back and nerding out with today. I am so excited to have you back.
Yeah, I'm excited too. Last time was... incredibly fun for me, and I'm really happy to come back, and thank you for having me.
Of course, you're, like we said last time, you are always welcome here, my friend, and to know that you had a good time last time literally just grows my heart five times bigger than it already was. And like I said, I'm super excited to get and talk to you, because last time we talked was right after the first issue of Immortal Thor. And now we're on issue 5. So we've had a lot of stuff happen in between our last conversation and this one. Last time we talked, we also went over kind of, you know, your early career and your kind of origin in comic books and all that stuff. So anybody watching and listening to this episode, if you guys are curious to learn more about Martin's backstory and his origin and all that, go check out our first episode. But for this episode, Martin, let's get into it. Let's light the thunder, baby. Let's go.
Yeah.
Again, I'm so excited. Immortal Thor has been so great, man. Like, it has been so good. Al's writing mixed with your art is just like a match made in heaven. Like, I couldn't ask for anything more from a Thor book. So I guess to just start this off, I want to ask you again from our first conversation after issue 1. How are you feeling about Immortal Thor with the, now that we're a couple issues in, like the reception from fans, how's it feeling?
I mean, amazing, just amazing. I've put a lot of work into this project. Al has been great. The editors, the fans, everything has been fantastic so far. So yeah, I mean, I couldn't ask for more. Basically, I'm having a lot of fun. It's a lot of work. You see from the pages and the story that there's big stakes and you know, it's super epic. The scale is is huge, but yeah, I mean, it's incredibly fun. So yeah, I'm having the time of my life working on Immortal Thor.
Well, I'm having the time of my life reading it. And I know that I'm not alone, because I've seen, obviously, I'm very much in the comic book space and like I'm in tune to the conversations going on. And even obviously I'm the Thor guy. So it's like, yeah, I love it. Right. But even people, like, I've seen plenty of tweets over the past couple weeks, months, of people like, oh, like, I've never even really been into Thor that much, but this book is incredible. And like, just every time I tweet something about it, I get comments like, oh, this book has been amazing. So it's not even just like us in the Thor fandom. It's very clear that this book has been widely accepted by comic fans all over the place, which is just, again, makes my heart just grow. Being a Thor fan, I'm just like, yes, you see now why we love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I hear from people, people who are just starting with the whole Thor lore, and it's kind of, even for me, it's so huge, the stories and the lore. It's so complex and it's like so many years in the making, so it's kind of, it can be quite daunting for someone to just start reading Thor, you know. Mm-hmm. So but I hear from many like first time readers that they're having a lot of fun, and it's easy. I think you can tell that it's like beginner friendly, you know. It's so it's welcoming for people who have no idea about the character of or his lore. So yeah, I mean, it's great. It's awesome to have a story that is that's the hardest part, I think, for Al, to make it interesting. I mean, for Al and for every writer, actually, to make it interesting for people who already know who is well knowledgeable about the story and the character and the history, and also make it welcoming for first time readers. So yeah, I think he's really really succeeding in that part, in many parts, but in that part specifically. So yeah, everybody is having a great time with the title.
Yeah, and I mean, it comes through in the book for sure. I mean, you can tell you guys are having fun making it. We're all having fun reading it. And I think you got to give yourself a little credit too, because you like, obviously, Al's writing is amazing. And I think that's something that he's done very, like, incredibly well, at least from a Thor fan perspective, is like you're saying, making it both accessible to new readers. But it's like, this is one of the most deep and nerdy Norse mythology books like I have read. Like, my man is going deep into the mythology, very similar to Walt Simonson's run, which, again, it's like hard to out mythology Walt Simonson, but Al is doing it in a spectacular way. But I think your art adds to that, and that's kind of something we're going to get into with the Thor corpse, with, you know, going with the classic design of Thor in the beginning, and then also with the Thor corpse using much of their original designs as well. So it's both written and visually gives us that kind of nostalgia for the old Thor and the stories that have come before, but it's also just completely new and completely different. So I think you get just as much credit for that as the Al father does, for sure.
I do what I can.
Man, you do it beautifully. Which, speaking of, let's get into some of this beautiful art, because there's so many great panels and pages that I have to talk to you about and ask you about. And so I feel like, again, since we talked about Immortal Thor number one last time, we'll do a little catch up a little bit from issues 2 through 4. And so one in particular thing I wanted to bring up with you that I really love is Loki's design. Loki's design throughout the book, but specifically I loved in issue 3, or the end of issue 2 and then issue 3, his they're like,
it's hard for me to go back. I can't specifically, but yeah, it's the end of issue 2, right?
It's like the kind of suit, like I called it the Skald God like look is what I'm calling it. They got like the jacket and the horns, and it just so like almost like Hellfire Gala, like elegant. I don't mean to cut you off, but I'm just curious, did you come up with that design? Was that yours, and like where did that come from?
No, it was a group effort, basically, because as you know, Alex Ross designed all the characters, but that specific design was mine, basically, but not really, not entirely mine, because it came from a description from Al. So based on he had ideas like this kind of exuberant David Bowie, you know,
yeah, 100%.
It has this androgynous look, a jester, but a magnificent jester, you know. It's like flamboyant and powerful, and you know, it has all these elements. So yeah, we tried, I tried many designs and alterations. It was like a 2-day process, basically. Many alternatives. We went back and forth with Al and the editors until we finally arrived to the final look, basically. But yeah, it took like 2 days of constant sketching and going back and forth with stuff until we finally arrived to not only the design but also the color scheme, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I mean,
that was basically.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was just, I loved that look so much. And I was just like, oh, I like it's again, just so like you described it perfectly, which is why you're the artist and I'm just the guy who talks about comic books. But yeah, the like jester, like elegant, flamboyant David Bowie, I see that for sure.
Yeah.
And that also kind of leads me to another question. Like you said, a lot of this stuff is a team effort, right? And yeah. I'm curious. So, at least to my knowledge, it seems this seems like the first book that really depicts Loki as more gender fluid, as opposed to his their previous books and their previous appearances. Yeah. So I'm curious, what was that a conversation that you guys all had when beginning this book about Loki? Or
no, that was just Al's decision, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, the design for the. I don't know how to call it, but to call them basically, but the regular Loki that appears in the first issue, you know, that is a design. I don't remember the name of the artist. I'm sorry, but that design already exists on in other in Loki's books. So, but. I think that Al decided to push the binary look, and they are supposed to constantly from panel to panel. Some panels they look more feminine, in other panels they look more masculine. But you can't really you are not supposed to completely define them, you know.
Yeah, 100%.
You're as a reader, you're their face is constantly shifting, and you're not really sure. So, which is a challenge, actually. It's a challenge to do. The same way we are challenged by the notion of non-binary people, and we need to expand our minds and our concepts and go beyond the binary. The same way we have or at least we should entertain the idea that people can be gender non-conforming and non-binary, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, and we can all live in peace and just be happy with ourselves and with others, and respect other types of every other type of life. In the same way, it's hard to just make that switch in your brain for an artist, for a traditional artist who is always trying to I've always drawn men and women.
Yeah.
So when you face these type of characters, it's a challenge, but it's incredibly fun. And when it works and people and I've received praise from non-binary people who are having the time of their lives again, enjoying being represented by Loki. I mean, it's fantastic. It's incredibly rewarding, and yeah, I mean, it's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah. I really like it. And then we took that concept and we just we amplified it when we did the design. So yeah, I mean, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I love it.
There wasn't really a discussion about it, or maybe Al and the editors had that discussion, but I didn't. From the start, the first script was clear about that Loki was non-binary, so I just went with it. So I just ran with it. So
I love that much. I mean, that's something that's super important to us, and I know it's super important to, you know, a lot of people in the community. And I think that the way you guys do it, and especially the way you draw it, because I mean, ultimately, like, again, Al is amazing, and I think that's also amazing too. How you're saying it wasn't really a conversation, like Al decided
No,
that
not
that's
really.
how it always was. So I love that. But again, you got to give yourself credit because I love the way in which you depict it. I think is amazing, and how you're talking about how it changes from panel to panel. And I think again, you the way in which you draw it is just phenomenal. And again, I think it's so
Thank you.
important to have those characters, and like you're saying, to make it just normal, right? It's just a normal character. And so
and
I tip
also,
my hat off to you, man. I think that's just awesome.
I'm not too knowledgeable about you know, myths and lore and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Myths from real life, I mean, not fictional.
Yeah.
And you have characters that are non-binary. You mm-hmm. know, there are cultures that have people who are non-binary, and there's, I mean, it's perfectly normal. We on our, you know, our Western understanding of stuff, we are incredibly binary. Mm-hmm. Our understanding of the world and our human experience is absolutely binary. Mm-hmm. But there are many cultures and many characters or gods, call it whatever you want, from myths that are because they transcend the our human, you know, vessels and concepts. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't a god be a non-binary creature, entity, call it whatever mm-hmm. you want. So it's so, I don't know, it's so limited, the understanding that it has to be one or the other. It's so limited and so basic that it's almost an offense to what a god would be.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It really is, and especially Loki. I mean, for you know, my people out there that are familiar with Norse mythology, which I'm sure you've read a lot on recently, but I mean, Loki gets with an eight-legged horse and
You don't have a problem. You have no problem with the idea of a character turning into whatever, turning into animals and having all the powers in the world and going through different dimensions or whatever. Mm-hmm. All of that is fine.
All that's cool.
All that's cool. But as soon as you make it non-binary, then I have a problem. With that, I have a problem. So, I mean,
it just
fuck off.
Say it again. No, please, say it again, Martin.
I don't know if
say
I can curse, but...
Please, curse, man. Yes,
fuck off,
dude.
Off.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's a clip, right? I wish I had a soundboard right here to give you the air horns, because that is... You cooked with that, my friend.
Yeah.
But, again, I love that. That could be a whole topic of discussion, like a whole episode of discussion. But I got to ask you, too, in the same issue, I guess this is kind of going more in the male direction of what we're just talking about, but I got to bring it up just because this is a personal thing for me. Thor's beard. I love on issue 3, we get Thor with a beard, and you know, obviously I love Thor with a beard. So this is just a funny question though, but can I put a note into Al to bring the beard back for like an issue or so? Is there any hope for the beard to come back?
Is Thor clean shaven
the rest of the run?
I take these things just as funny, you know, as anecdotes, but I have like especially because Al doesn't really have, I believe he has a Twitter account, but he doesn't use it.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I have so many people constantly saying, why did you, I don't know, why did you shave Thor? or why did, I don't know, why isn't Throg in Thor corps?
Hey, that's for a great question.
I have so many people asking me for stuff, like I decide them, and I don't, that's all in the script.
Barnes, Al, can you please answer some of these questions?
Yeah, it's like, like, I don't know, man. I don't decide. It's not like one day I just wake up and say, okay, now I'm going to draw Thor with a beard. That it doesn't work that way. Yeah. In the script says, okay, now he has a beard because a lot of time passed. And now he shapes it. Okay, that's it. I do that.
Mars like, I'm just following orders, everyone. Like, yeah, exactly. Don't come at me.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that leads in perfectly.
I take it lightly. I mean, I just every once in a while I had to explain to people that I don't make those calls.
Yeah.
So
like, don't shoot the messenger, guys.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm just a human printer of the script.
Human printer. Martin Coglo, human printer. But
basically.
So we have the beard. Like I said, I just personally love a bearded Thor. So like I said, I had to bring that up. But really the whole reason for the beard, at least narratively, was to introduce us to Tormod. And that is Thor's new axe that he forges in that issue. And so I'm curious about this axe, which, again, we literally just said it a second ago. You're just the messenger here. Al's the one, you know, writing this stuff, which, by the way, you talk about Al, like how, like you said, he has social media, but doesn't really use it. I always picture, like, Al's amazing. I all respect to the man. I always picture Al like sitting in like a cottage, like on like a mountaintop, and he just is like just looking at a storm, and like that's how he writes. Like he's just like he's like a mythical creature himself, right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He literally is just in his tower somewhere, creating this amazing things in his head.
It's really hard to find, you have like very small changes. So I mean, but he's a gentleman. That
you gotta wait for a storm to come, and then you say his name three times, and that's how you can get in contact with Al.
Yeah, exactly. But
going back to the new axe, I'm very curious. Again, like we talked about, a lot of this stuff is a collaborative effort between everybody. But to me, Tormod, I mean, I hope I'm saying that right, but the axe looks a lot like the ultimate hammer from the ultimate Thor and the ultimate universe. And so
I'm not familiar with it.
Okay. Well, it's like a hammer on the one side and then the axe on the other. So, I mean, that kind of answers my question, but I was wondering, was that intentional to make it look like that? As in like, I know you're not going to spoil anything, but maybe a little hint to what's to come. But so no, that was just the design that had nothing to do with the ultimate hammer.
Yeah, no. I mean, that was a design. At first, I can't. There are some things that I can't disclose. You know, some things I can't talk about. But there was a discussion in the 10-page preview. You know,
Jackson and Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly's annual, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When you see Thor just all, you know, all his clothes teared down and he's bleeding and all that, and he doesn't have the helmet on. And in that last image, he's looking up and he has the Mjolnir and the axe. And in that particular time, they weren't all hadn't completely landed on what type of axe was going to be, but it was similar to the Stormbreaker. But not necessarily the same. I don't know, because there are things that I am not aware, you know. There are many things in the story that there's a lot of information that I don't personally have, to be honest. So I'm also surprised by stuff I read on the scripts. So but yeah, there was the idea, or maybe Stormbreaker, but maybe not, we don't really know. So yeah, it was like ambiguous. The design was kind of ambiguous, so I don't really know exactly where it's going. I have absolutely no idea. So yeah,
we're in the same seat, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a few issues ahead, but not so many. So yeah.
Well, that's why I ask, and you brought it up perfectly, because the reason I asked that is because of the Thor annual that came out with your guys' preview at the end of it. And when I first read that, and even in my review, I immediately landed on that it was the hammer from the Ultimate Universe, like the one that Volstagg wields and all that stuff. So I was like, holy shit, how did this happen? You know what I mean? So again, when we got to it and we found out that it was this whole new axe that he crafted himself, I'm like, oh, okay. So I wonder, like, that makes a lot of sense though. Like you're saying, at that time, it was a little ambiguous of where the axe was going to come from.
Yeah.
So that it enlightens me a lot. Like I said, it answers a lot of questions. I cannot wait to see where that goes. And I know, so he says in the book, first of three. So I'm guessing that the third one will be his belt. So I'm super, again, I know, I don't want you to spoil it, so you can just keep that to yourself, but
no, I have no idea where that's going.
Oh, okay.
I have no idea. Yeah. Hey, so yeah.
See, I love it. Like I said, we're on this ride together, Martin.
Yeah,
we're
exactly,
in this together.
Exactly.
But I gotta ask again, before we get into the meat and potatoes of issue 5, which is just incredible. But I gotta ask you really quick, another personal favorite of mine, and I know fan favorite of the Thor community, Better Ray Bill, our boy Bill. You bring him back in issue 4, and I mean, I just love Better Ray Bill so much. He's one of my favorite characters. And I'm curious, so we are big fans over here of the Daniel Warren Johnson miniseries that came out about a year or so ago. And I love your design of Better Ray Bill. And it feels very similar to the Daniel Warren Johnson Better Ray that, that he did that year ago. And his storyline in this book very much reflects what happened in that book. So I'm just curious, just as a fan, did you read Daniel Warren Johnson's Better Ray?
No, I didn't have the opportunity to do it yet. I have so many things to, I have a huge list of stuff I would love to read, but I haven't. In that issue, they just asked for that, I also drew him with that uniform in Banner of War too.
You're right.
He's also dressed like that. So they asked me to draw him with that exact costume before he grabs Mjolnir, and when he grabs Mjolnir, we'll go to Simonson
classic
design.
But yeah, I noticed that, like you just said, when he grabs Mjolnir, we get him in the classic Simonson armor, like from his first appearance. But I did notice you put a little flair in there. You put a little extra in there on his like shoulder pieces. He's got like little design on there.
No, but no. That comes straight from
Simonson's?
Yeah.
I gotta go back then, because I was like, ooh, Martin's adding a little flavor to it's just a little bit more pronounced in your version.
Maybe, but if you go, I actually had the designs, and I just went full on Simonson there, like respected the reference entirely. So yeah, those patterns are already there.
I'm honestly embarrassed now, because Simonson that's my favorite Thor run, which I mean, so far. We'll see if we get to issue 50 of Immortal, then we'll start talking. But
you know how it is. I remember when I was younger, there are many designs in popular culture. It's like the Mandela effect, you know, this bullshit, right? You assume you have all the details of stuff you like. You assume you have the absolute, like you, with full certainty that this design is like that. And then you go back and you're like, really? Did it change?
Yeah, 100%. I'm sure you see that a lot as an artist too.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
When you go back and like, I mean, I'm sure Better Ray Bill is just one example, but even like iconic characters, I'm sure like there's times you go back and you're like, wait, it is like that. Like, oh, his eyes are green or whatever. Maybe,
It isn't the same when you enjoy a character or a story from a reader point of view. It's not the same when you have to actually draw it, you know?
Yeah.
When you have to draw a character, you start to, and you focus on all the details and all the stuff, you start to really, you go deep into the design and actually find details that you never paid attention to. Mm-hmm. So it's not the same. So when you have to draw a character and draw it many times, you start to actually find little details and stuff that you weren't aware they were there, but they were always there. So
And again, that's why you're the artist, my friend, because you got that eye to see those little details. But I'm curious, this leads perfectly into another question I have. Speaking of Better Ray Bills, the Simonson outfit and stuff, something else that we kind of touched on this already, but that I loved about the issue 4 and issue 5 with the Thor corpse is you guys did keep the original designs for pretty much every character. Like Storm is rocking her design from, I don't even remember what issue, but Claremont X-Men, like years ago. And like we said, Better Ray Bills and the Simonson. So again, were there any conversations of maybe updating those costumes? Did you ever like imagine other design, like a little updated, or was it always like, oh, they are always going to be in the classic costumes?
What I really like to do, you know, I am let's say a current comic artist. So I have artistic sensibilities from my time, so because this is my time. So what I do is modern just because I'm doing it right now, you know, in our present. So when I go back and take those designs from the 70s or 90s or 80s, depending when they were made, just by doing them now with my style, even if I respect absolutely I respect all the details and I reproduce them exactly as I see them, I'm just modernizing them just by doing them in my style. At least that's how I see it. So I actually enjoy just doing the characters as they are. You know, if Al wants like Better Ray Bill from Simonson's design, I just go and reproduce the character just as it is. I don't change anything, but by reproducing it now, it just looks like a modern version, because it is a modern drawing of that character. But I didn't want to change anything, actually, because I think that the designs are great as they are. So if Al wants to evoke characters that he enjoyed as a kid, why not just doing them as they are? You know, I don't have this specific story just lends itself to actually take the characters, the classic characters as they are, and just use them as they are, and just bring them back to life and bring those costumes back to life and just draw them as they are. And I think it's great. I have a great time, actually. I don't have the There are characters that you would like to change or do in a special way, in a new or special or, you know, modern way. Mm-hmm. But there are characters that you just take them and draw them in your style, and just by transition, it just they look great with the classic design. You mm-hmm. know, it's a modern look on a classic design, basically. Yeah. So yeah.
And I mean, I think you're kind of saying, you know, it's, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
These,
yeah.
Designs for most of them are, you know, iconic. So I 100% agree, but I think it's super interesting, again, you know, from the artist perspective of how you're saying, you know, even like, I don't know, let's take Superman, for example, right? Like, you can take an old, you know, Superman and you can recreate it exactly. But just the fact that it's you doing it in this time with, you know, the level, your, you know, knowledge and whatnot of how art has progressed, it will look different, like, no matter what.
Exactly.
And I think that's so interesting.
Not that they are outdated in the first place, because they are not. But if you take, you know, if you, like Superman, for example, and you take, you know, the design from the 30s, and you make that exact design now, it feels awesome to take, because people who grew with those characters, I don't know, like, artists that were drawing in the 90s, they felt in the 90s they felt like modernizing everything, you know, and they went to excesses, like it was like too much. The 90s were it was
pouches, muscles.
Yeah, but it was like way, way too much. Mm-hmm. So I like cleaner versions, you know? And so it's like, as you said, if it ain't broke, people who were reading these stories 20 or 30 years ago, they did need a modern, they did need to modernize, to make things more modern or more current to those times, you know. They needed a change, which is great, but that time it worked. But now we are like, we are in the post truth, you know. We are in the post modernizing era, so we're going back to very, very old designs, and you're like, I mean, this looks look great. So why would I need to change them? Why would I need to do anything? I'm just going to draw them, and they will instantly become iconic again and fresh again. But I don't really need to change the design. I don't really need to, you know. Sometimes less is more, and so, sometimes, you know. So yeah, Al wanted those designs. He puts those designs on the reference pages, and he's like, I would like this and that, and you know, Storm, as in this issue of this run, and I want a Beta Ray Bill's design from Simonson, and I'm like, okay, I'll just do them as they are, as they were back in those times, and I think they look great.
Cut the check, baby.
Yeah. so yeah, that's I think they work in the context of the story and the context of what the whole run and the whole Ewing's approach of the characters and the stories. I think they work perfectly as they are and as they were. So yeah, I don't feel the need to change them in any significant way. I just do them as they are, and I think they look great. So
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, for all the reasons you just explained, it works perfectly, especially with the story that Al is telling with specifically issue five. But you touch on something that I think is very fascinating for people who aren't artists and, you know, aren't in the creative field. And this has been a topic of conversation going on very frequently recently. I don't know if you're aware of a lot of this, but there's a big topic of conversation going on right now about artists and writers putting too much of themselves into a story. And some of the conversation is around, you know, you're hired to write or to draw Thor. So just draw Thor how, you know, Thor's always been drawn and, you know, get your paycheck and call it a day. And I think that you have a very refreshing and great outlook on art and creativity in general. So I want to ask kind of your opinion on the whole discourse of artists putting themselves in their work. And I'll also throw out, just for context as well, Mitch Gerard, Batman artist, has drawn tons of stuff. He recently just tweeted saying, "Art without a reflection of the artist is soulless and drivel," which I 100% agree with. So I just, again, I, as an artist, as someone who does this for a living, what is your opinion kind of on, like I said, putting yourself in your art and yourself being reflected in your artwork, whether it's Thor or anything else?
I mean, I can't talk for the writers, you know. This conversation is a lot more focused on writers than artists. It's basically impossible to do, you know, a type of sterile, script that has nothing to do with you. It has no life experience. There's nothing, you know. It's like, what even is, what are you even doing if you are not putting something of your, you know, your life and your lived experience and what you are and what groups you belong to, whatever. I'm not that I don't have a huge knowledge. I would want to see more examples, because they talk about these things, but I don't see people. I've seen like two or three, but I don't see people actually giving clear examples of what they mean. I assume that they mean very specific stuff. I assume that they don't like specific groups of people, you know, or specific minorities or whatever, and they just rationalize that, call it hatred or just being uncomfortable with those groups of people, and they see it like an invasion of their youth, an invasion of what they enjoyed as kids. And I think that's incredibly stupid. I mean, I think you have to let it go, man. You have to let, like, seriously, you have to let it go. It's as simple as that. It's like more and more people are entering the comic scene, and that's a good thing. That's always a good thing. And I want to see people from every creed, every race, every sexual orientation. I want to absorb knowledge from the experiences of people all over the world and all over all the paths of life. I don't want to see stories and characters just stagnated, you know, you want to keep those things like a sanctuary, you know, like you enjoyed a particular you know, story. You grew up in the 80s, and you grew up with certain stories drawn in a certain way or written in a certain way, and you want that specifically that to keep going and going and going and never change and never evolve. That's impossible. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is absolutely impossible to stop that. It's impossible. The you know, the Pandora box has been opened. I mean, and you can't put all those things back. So, and I'll tell you something else. Like, I'm 40 years old. I've seen a lot of change through my years, you know. Mm-hmm. I've seen music that I enjoy changing to going places that I don't enjoy. And you know what I do? I just leave.
Yeah, because you're a normal person.
Yeah, because I am a normal person. So if a specific industry if you don't like current, you still like they didn't destroy all stuff. You can always go back. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You can always go back. If you don't enjoy what it's been done currently, just go back and read whatever you want. And something else, current stories don't empathy multiplies stories. Mm-hmm. It doesn't subtract. You know what I mean?
100%.
Art is multiplied by people. Mm-hmm. It's not. If you want specific types of stories, they still make them. They still make those. But now we have more. You know what I mean? We have more stories.
Yeah.
Now, so what you want is a group of stories and a group of characters to just disappear because you feel threatened by the concept of change and evolution of society. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry, man, but if you don't like what you see, and I've been there in other aspects of life, mm-hmm. if you don't like what things have become in any specific media, mm-hmm. you leave. Like for example, I was a huge huge Simpsons fan mm-hmm. when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Like huge. The first eight, nine seasons for me, they are like the gold standard in art, in TV, in animation, whatever. But over time, they started to change, and they became something I didn't like. So I just stopped watching The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. And they kept going and going and going. And whenever I want to watch The Simpsons I like, and The Simpsons I grew up with, I go and watch The Simpsons I grew up with, and mm-hmm. and have a great time,
yeah,
doing so, right? Mm-hmm. So, and The Simpsons can keep going and going and going, and it's been, I don't know, like 24 years. I haven't
something watched, crazy.
I haven't watched new Simpsons episodes in fucking 20 years, and they keep going. But I just stopped.
Yeah.
I don't go.
It's not like you're getting online like Simpsons sucks so bad.
Yeah, exactly. I don't go on Twitter or whatever and
just don't watch it.
Constantly talk about how the Simpsons suck.
Yeah.
And though they are not the product I used to consume when I was a kid.
That's not my Homer.
Yeah, exactly. So again, I'm sorry, man, but if you don't like something, leave them.
Yeah, just read something else,
or do you know, get together with an artist or a writer and do the things you want to do. You know?
See how it works out for you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But I love that so much. And again, I just think that you have such a great, obviously you do this for a living, but you have just such a great understanding of art, creativity, and like what that means. And this whole conversation just seems so silly to me because it's like, yes. To me, again, I'm not an artist. You're the authority here. But it's like, that's not...
I'm no authority.
Well, I just mean this for a living. But yeah, but that's not art to me.
I'm talking more as a consumer than I do as an artist.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've stopped listening to bands I really liked because they evolved into a type of music that I just stopped enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't go to their, to their social media and say, you suck now. You suck now. Why don't you keep playing what I liked 20 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's sad. It's sad, actually.
It is very sad.
It's really sad. So I don't know, man. Just leave. Mm-hmm. There are so many, first of all, you have so much media now, like so much media, mm-hmm. you have so many films and books and comics. You have so much stuff. I grew up in the 80s and 90s and I would have to wait for specific times to watch cartoons because mm-hmm. you will see them, from 9 a.m. to 11, and then at 5 p.m. to 6, and something like that. And I would watch whatever I could. I just, if it was animated, I was happy,
mm-hmm.
I watched like girl cartoons mm-hmm. because I wanted to see cartoons. So if they were girly in any way or girl oriented, mm-hmm. I would just watch them because I wanted to see cartoons. But we used to starve for content, you know. in the 70s and 80s, you were starving for content. Mm-hmm. I would read time and time again the same stories because, first of all, I didn't have much money and I didn't have much. I had a lot of time, but I didn't have too much media nor too much money. So mm-hmm. I would have to save to buy a TPV or of X story that I wanted. So once I bought those TPVs, I would read them time and time and time again, because I was starving for stuff. I was mm-hmm. starving for stories, for comics, for comic strips, whatever. So now we have so much. We have so much stuff to enjoy. But you keep complaining because, I don't know, a character you enjoyed 30 years ago changed.
Yeah.
Over time.
And it's like, it's just to me that if nothing changes, nothing evolves, that's not art. Like, what are we even doing here? Like, I don't want to read, I love Walt Simonson's Thor run, right? But it's like, if I want to read that run, I'm going to go read that run. I don't want Al to come in and recreate that run. I want something new, something fresh. And to me, in my opinion, that only comes from the creators' personal experiences, whether that be their experience, their outlook on life, the way that they, internalize feelings, all of that come, whether you're intentionally, I'm sure when you sit down to write or draw Thor, you're not I'm going to put everything I love into this, right? But subconsciously you do. Like, it just naturally comes out in the work, and that's what art is.
When characters are acting, when two characters are arguing or whatever, you make them act mm-hmm. and they act as you act. If I want to draw Thor is super he's angry and screaming,
mm-hmm.
Consciously or unconsciously, I'm going to draw him. I'm going to draw all the lines on his face, will resemble in some ways will resemble my face, because mm-hmm. I only know, I mean, I can look at photos and stuff, but sometimes you don't have a specific photo of a specific expression you yeah. need or an angle you need. So you take a picture of you, you know, if it is like a very complicated angle and you try to do it by imagination, but you are not really getting there, or you are getting there, but there are things that are not really working. So And there's always a time constraint. So you take a picture of your hands, or you take a picture of your expressions or features or whatever. So it is impossible to not bring something from you to the page. You know, yeah. It's impossible. they don't realize, but they want like AI. Basically, they want to just you know, make prompts of stuff they enjoyed 30 years ago, and they want like this. I don't remember the word in English, but when you cooked when you did two or three different meals and you put them together and you have like
amalgamation. Like,
yeah, you have like leftovers, you know, in your fridge, and you're like, I don't want to make dinner, so I'm going to take all the things and just eat this. They mm-hmm. want that, basically.
Yeah.
They want like eat, constantly eat leftovers, you know?
That yeah, it's like 100%. Leftovers. That's a great way to put it, yeah.
So, I don't know, man. I don't know.
We're feasting on three-course meals over here, so y'all can eat on your leftovers.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Yeah. I don't know. And if you change, I grew up in a very different time, you know? Mm-hmm. I feel like an old person talking like this, but in many aspects, I am an old person. Like, I grew up in the 80s and early 90s, and media was like super homophobic and not even transphobic, because trans didn't exist mm-hmm. for media back then, you know.
Yeah.
So it was racist. You have all these things or sexist or misogynistic. You have all these concepts, and you will. I grew up with those, and I got for many years that was all the culture and all the knowledge I had. Mm-hmm. Especially if you grow up in my town, for example, there was pretty much no diversity, like none, like zero. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's even today there's like very like super like very few black people, for example. Mm-hmm. Like very few, like I don't know, like you see one black person, I don't know, once every 2 months or you know, it's like everybody's like white, mm-hmm. different types of white, and now it's it has in the situation has improved. For example, there's practically like no homophobia. You know, you see gay people walking around and having a completely free and accepted life, and everyone is cool with that. And you see like super young guys like holding hands, and when I grew up, that was absolutely impossible. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely impossible. You, of course, they were around. Of yeah. course, gay people were around, but they didn't show any because they couldn't. Mm-hmm. You know, they couldn't show who they were, and they couldn't hold hands with or kiss whoever they wanted to kiss. So those things are thankfully are changing, but. Mm-hmm. When I grew up, you didn't see any of that. That was like a scandal. Like
yeah.
seeing two guys kissing or two women kissing was like a scandal.
Mm-hmm.
So when I grew up and started to experience change in society, at first it was uncomfortable for me, because when you grow up in those circumstances, it can be it can be uncomfortable. But in those situations, you have two paths to follow, like getting constantly mad of changes, you know, and getting constantly on the defensive and hateful about the things that are changing in society and that you cannot stop, or start to realize that there's nothing wrong with that. Like two guys getting married or kissing or holding hands, there's no apocalypse. Mm-hmm. I was promised an apocalypse, but the apocalypse didn't come. Mm-hmm. Didn't come. And yeah. And we legalized marijuana and the apocalypse didn't come. Mm-hmm. And we legalized abortion and the apocalypse didn't come. So things change and change and change. And you're like, okay, I'm not really like no one's hurting me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. The sky's not falling. What? Yeah.
The sky's not falling. No one. I don't have, you know, like raging gay people trying to touch me and grab me on the streets, and that doesn't happen. Yeah. You know?
I love that you were, which again, because you're, you know, a normal person and not one of these psycho weirdos. But, you know, again, me too, being, you know, a white dude, I come from a very small cornfield kind of town. And it's like you said, you have, you know, things change, society changes. And as you get older, you're, you know, you can either, like you said, go down the defensive and like, oh, this isn't how it used to be, right? Yeah. Or you can take that opportunity to sit and learn and learn what's going on, and like you said, like see things from other people's perspective, other people's point of views. And that's why it's so important, like you were saying, to have all these people in the comic community making comics in comics. Yeah. And we all need to be able to see other people's perspectives, their lives, and they all deserve to be represented just how we all have been.
Yeah, exactly. A few days ago, a couple of weeks ago, I started playing with my daughter, who is almost 4, but she's 3 still. I started playing, you know, like old school Street Fighter, you know, Street Fighter 2. And she instantly, like instantly fell in love with Chun-Li, you know? And she said, like, I really like her, daddy, because she's a girl who is very pretty and very strong, you know?
And in
that video game, we're talking a video game from the early 90s, you have one woman there, just one.
Mm-hmm.
She gravitated like instantly, went and chose Chun-Li and started playing with Chun-Li in a very, you know, in a very childlike way. But she fell in love with Chun-Li like instantly. So. Yeah. That right there is representation. Mm-hmm. Like as simple as that, a four year old girl like saw one female character, the one female character in that video game, and she was like, oh my god, I love her, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, there you have it right there. Right. Mm-hmm. There is the whole meaning of representation and why we need representation in media and in art is you have it right there in the answer of a 4-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. Like she wants to see herself or live vicariously through a character or in a 30-year-old video game, you know.
Yeah.
So And the same thing happens for every type of minority or you know. And I'm like, that's great. That's fine. I mean, I don't. If you don't live with that hate, you realize that there is no agenda. There is no. Threat. I don't feel threatened. Mm-hmm. I feel. I'm content. I feel great. I feel wonderful. I like to see different people than me. I don't want to see like if you have 20 characters, I don't want 20 characters who look like me.
Yeah,
I
100%.
I don't need that. I don't need
that's
that.
Not interesting. We know that.
Yeah, that's it's boring. It's fucking boring. You know, I'm sorry, but I don't want to be bored. I want to see other people. I want to see how they feel. What lives they have. You know, what thing makes them angry? What makes them happy? I might not understand them all, and maybe I will never understand them. But at least I tried, and at least it's you know what? It's like food, you know. It's like food. I like food. I love food. I bake. I cook. I've even cooked professionally, and I fucking love trying dishes from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to eat the same fucking three dishes all my life. I don't want that. I want to try Japanese food. I want to try Asian, all Asian food. You have so many different flavors, so many different types of spices, different types of you know of beef, different cuts of beef. The list goes on and on and on. And when you want comics done in a very specific way, it's like wanting to have the same fucking three meals you had since you were a kid and keep you want to keep you know eating burgers and fries and ketchup and burgers and fry and ketchup and you know and mac and cheese and burgers and mac and cheese and burgers and mac and cheese and burger like stop man stop fucking stop
seriously dude, like, fucking I could not agree with you. Martin said, give me that spice, dude. Give me that spicy
yeah
shit.
exactly
I love it, dude.
If I try a new spice, I might regret it. a few hours later, I might regret trying that. But I mean, you live and learn, man. You live and learn.
Yeah. I just love that so much, dude. And I mean, this is why not only do I love your work, but I just love you as a person too, because I could not agree more with everything you just said. And again, it's like, we want interesting stories. We want these characters to evolve, grow. And again, that only comes from people writing them or drawing them that come from different walks of life, different experiences. And again, it's like, I don't want to see myself or, you know, the same character over and over again. Like you said, that's boring as shit. Like, keep that bland ass chicken breast away from me. Give me some spice. Give me some seasoning that.
Even if your food is great, even if your food is great, but because it's not like the comics you read as a kid were bad.
Oh, no. Yeah.
It's just that you can't keep having the same, even if it's good or even if it's great, you can't fucking continue having the same three meals over and over again.
Yeah. Like expand the palate.
And if you don't and you want to keep eating the same three meals over and over again, just do it. But don't try to bring down the whole food industry because they are adding spices that you are afraid of knowing or trying.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, 100%, man. Like I said, I cannot agree with you more. We could talk about that all day, and I just love your perspective on that. Like, dude, again, air horns in the chat for you. Yeah, you fucking took that, dude. You're you're true king of the comic industry. But I gotta ask, I gotta get back to Thor. Get my Thor questions out. So with issue 5, like we already talked about, you know, we got the Thor corpse coming in here. We talked about bringing them all together in their respective looks and costumes and stuff. But something that I am just blown away by every issue, and specifically in this one too, is Tyrannos. And not only him as a character, but I love the sense of scale of Tyrannos, like versus Thor. And like specifically I'm thinking of, I think it's issue 5, this most recent one, with Storm and Thor like standing on the moon, and like you see the wheel is just like massive in front of them.
It's 5.
And I'm 5. Just again, not being an artist,
no,
and, like,
or
really,
four
I'd say it might be Thor.
Four.
One of the two, whoever's watching, listening, 4 or 5, one of the two.
Yeah, I believe 4.
Yeah.
It is 4. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because in 5, they are just
there. He's throwing that shit.
After the prologue. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm curious, again, not being an artist and not really understanding how that kind of stuff works, how does that process work with making him seem just so massive and having that translate onto the page? Because I don't know, again, not being an artist, I just imagine, like, do you ever like, oh, Thor needs to be smaller, or oh, Thor needs to be like, how does that work?
I mean that takes a lot of work, because I really like, you know, when I was a kid, like very little kid, I remember having dreams of gigantic creatures, like, you know, destroying my city, and I was just running, and that was a 50-50 feeling. It was as scary as it was exciting. I distinctly remember that that feeling of being scared, but like incredibly excited at the same time.
Yeah.
When I grew up, and I don't know, I discovered like Godzilla and or H.P. Lovecraft and all this cosmic horror and stuff, I fell in love with all that. Like I you know, that tingling feeling. I love being. It happens less and less as you grow up, no? Right? But I'm always searching for that sense of real, really scary scale. So I try to see myself or even see myself through the perspective or the characters, or you know, play with your camera, your virtual camera, and try to come up with the most intense and epic angles. If the story needs it to be, but yeah, I just try and look and see and try to find the best way to represent what the comic the page is asking for. So it's a lot of trial and error until you find the shot you want and the angle you want, and you just go for it and try to do it as awesome as you can,
dude,
basically.
But
it's incredibly fun. It's a lot of work, a lot of work rendering Toranos, but oh man,
dude,
it's awesome.
Those pages are do you do commissions, because I need a Toranos like on my wall, like I can only imagine how amazing. I've seen your pencils that you post on Twitter and stuff, but I'm thinking specifically, I think it's issue 4, the opening page of him, like I just posted it on Twitter the other day. Coming out, like, dude, it's just like every time, we're 5 issues in, I think he's been in every single issue besides number 3. And every time I'm just blown away by, like I said, just how massive and imposing he is on the page. And I think specifically, like I said, with the wheel on the moon, and then also when Mjolnir like flies right through his fingers. And again, it's just like, you just do it so well, where it's like, again, not being an artist, I would imagine it would be easy just to make Mjolnir like a little speck, right? And it's flying through, but the way you do it, like you can still see the hammer, and it just emphasizes again, just how massive this freaking dude is.
Yeah, that's the challenge. That's basically the challenge. When you have to, on the same panel, you have to, you have to draw regular size stuff, and Toranos like in the same panel, that becomes like super tricky, super fast. You know, for example, when the script asked for him trying to reach Mjolnir and he didn't make it, like I was like, how do I do this? Like it's not even an ant. The Mjolnir in size, Mjolnir compared to Toranos is nothing. It's a speck of dust. Mm-hmm. So how do I do it? Okay, I'm going to make it like shine, you know, and to leave a trail. You have to develop resources to tell the story, basically, and try, like, if this was a movie, how would it look, you know, how would it look, a super giant entity creature trying to grab something as small as a hammer. Okay, maybe the hammer shines, maybe you can see the trail, I don't know. Maybe it looks like a star, just try to find a way to tell the story and it also, it doesn't have to, it shouldn't look forced, you know? Like the action has to flow. You have to read easily what's going on. I try to always do panels. You shouldn't figure out a panel as a reader, you know? You should just see it and understand it like immediately. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't have to, but what's going on here? I don't understand. What do they mean, you know? I try to always like never do that. I don't want to you shouldn't be, you know, a detector. you shouldn't be interpreting the panels as they are, like hieroglyphs, you know. You should see the panels, how they flow, from left to right and from top to bottom, and just understand what's going on. Even if a perfect comic page is a page that you understand exactly what's going on without the word balloons, you know? Mm-hmm. If you see the pages without the words and you still get what's going on, that's a successful comic page in my book. So I try to do that, basically. I try to do something that you can clearly interpret, you can clearly read, and make it epic, make it awesome, make it interesting, dynamic, and easy to read and easy to follow.
Yeah, and I think you do that amazingly well. That's something we actually talked about on our first interview, like how you, you know, set a scene and the flow of a page. And I think, again, you do that so, so well, especially when we're talking about, like, in this issue five, when you have Tyrannos with Storm and Loki and Thor, and all of them are, like, flying around in the same page, but never once, at least for me, and I think I speak for a lot of people, there was never once where I was like confused of where I'm at on the page or like where that, the page is going next. And so I, you know, again, tip my hat onto you. Succeeded.
That makes me incredibly happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because... I gotta ask, with, again, with Tyrannos and the sense of scale and everything, something that I found when I'm reading and something that made me curious, again, from the art perspective, is to me, again, and I think a lot of this is just personal flavor and personal taste, but I found that when I'm reading my physical copy, the art and like Tyrannos, the sense of scale really pops out at me a lot more as opposed to when I read it digitally, like on my iPad or something. So I'm curious, as an artist, do you have a preference of like how people experience your art, and or do you ever, when you're doing art, does that ever inform like how you draw something, thinking of like, oh, how will this look on an iPad as opposed to on a page?
I don't think of that specific question, but you always have to do pages that read well in the comic format and the comic size. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm always worried about that, especially when you work digitally, because you can always zoom and add a lot of detail that doesn't work and has no right to be there in the first place. So I do art that should look good on the physical page, and it's the same with movies. You know, it's like, I've never watched, and I never will watch a movie on a cell phone, on a phone. Mm-hmm. Like, no. So, I do. Being working for Marvel, I have the Marvel Unlimited subscription. And sometimes I read comics on the phone, but I try not to. I try to have, if I can, I like to draw to read physical stuff, and it should look good there. If you want to read on a bigger format, you can. But it will change too much the experience. And if you read too small, it's like, it's really hard to get the scale of stuff. It's like watching a Godzilla movie on a phone.
Yeah,
it's like,
you don't really get sense that, like,
it's too hard to enjoy something that it's supposed to be big. And I mean, you can read more like intimate, you know, like human scale stuff, and that will read relatively well. But if you want to see like a huge spectacle, and you read it on a very small device, I don't know, man. I don't think it works as well. But to each their own, basically.
Yeah, like I said, everyone's got their own personal flavor. But I just I feel like it's something I never really noticed until, like I said, specifically this last issue. For some reason, it was I'm gonna butcher the name, but the Demiurge, the page you have with the face looking over the moon, like that page in particular. For whatever reason, I read it physically first and like I turned the page. I'm like, holy shit. And then so usually I'll read it physically and then I upload it on my app so I can get my screenshots. Mm-hmm. You know, I love my posts.
Yeah.
But when I was looking back on it on my iPad, it just like, it did not give, like, it still looked amazing. Yeah. It still looked great. Mm-hmm. And even with on the iPad, it like zooms in a little bit more. So it like even like more zoomed in. But I don't know, like, again, I, for some reason, the physical just really hit me a lot harder.
I think, I mean, if you can't, for whatever reason, you can't access to a physical copy, that's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But it is still, it's like, you do stuff for a certain media, for a certain format, you know? It's like, I like to play like all video games, you know, like mm-hmm. like 8 and 16 bit games, and if you can play them on a CRT TV, they will look amazing. They will look incredible because they were made for those resolutions back in the day. Mm-hmm. So when you try to play an old, you know, like 8 or 16 bit game, and you play it on a huge screen, like a huge digital screen, it looks like shit. I mean,
yeah,
you can tweak stuff and buy, you know, scalers and whatever. But if you just plug your NES or whatever you have, if you plug it like directly to a modern huge digital TV, it looks like shit. So sometimes you do stuff like comics are analog in nature, you know, like they are supposed to be read on a physical or a piece of paper and or with a specific format. So whenever I can for any media, actually, I try to enjoy them in an analog way, basically.
100%.
I try to avoid digital stuff until I have no other other alternative.
Yeah, like you said, I 100% agree. It's like, that's how you really experience, especially like, I'm sure as an artist, like how you intend the page to come across, right? Like there's a certain intention behind that. But I could keep you here all day, Barton. I want to keep you here all day, but I know you're super busy. You got stuff to do. So I got some more Thor questions, but I want to ask you this one specifically, just because I think it's, so this kind of question means something different to everyone, really. And like we talked about, you're just the messenger a lot of times. So this is really like an Al question, but I want just your perspective as a fan and someone who has been drawing Thor. We talked about before, you know, growing up, you were real big into the X-Men and Alpha Flight, stuff like that. But you've been drawing Thor for a while now. You've been doing your Thor homework. So I'm sure you have a perspective on this. I'm curious, what are your kind of, so this run and this issue 5 deals a lot with what it means to be Thor and like the power of, like, what is the power of Thor? And in this last issue specifically, I'm going to quote Al here from the issue. Thor says, we are not measured by strength nor by raw power. The measure of us is what we do when the need for action lies within us and the hammer is in our hand. So I'm curious, from your opinion, your perspective, what does it mean to be worthy? And like, we get all the other Thor Corps members in there. I am always getting into fights with people about like, oh, Jane Foster can't be Thor because Thor is his name, like blah, blah. So again, obviously Al is the authority on this matter, but just from your opinion and from your, you know, journey with Thor, how do you see that topic?
Well, I mean, it's it's a huge question. Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting, basically, because again, every writer will have a different perspective of what it is to be worthy. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are writers that would say, hey, this character would never be worthy of Mjolnir or the power of the Odin force. But then comes another writer who understands this is again this goes back to what we previously discussed about putting your own input and your own point of view of life in art. So what it is to be worthy. I think like in the same way that when people say you're not brave if you don't if you're not afraid, you are brave when you are afraid and you do something that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. I think that's really that's what being brave really is. If you're not scared, like I'm not scared of walking, so I can just walk, and I'm not being I'm not being brave for doing that. But if you lost the ability to walk and you're rehabilitating and try to, you know, try to get back on your feet and try to start to walk again, and you can fall and you can get hurt or whatever, and you can and you keep trying until you succeed, then you are extremely brave. So sometimes other people are brave doing something that we take for granted. So being worthy, in my opinion, is standing up to doing what needs to be done, or being willing to do what needs to be done when the time comes. Mm-hmm. I think in that way, that's one of the many reflections that I'll will do. It's boring to see a character that Thor is always trying. It's always trying himself. It's like one of maybe the main core of Thor is he's always trying to prove himself worthy. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have to relax a little. You don't have to be worthy all the time. You can you can fall, get back and try again. So I think I don't know, man. It can be really complex, and really and the answer might be like super simple. How do you you might try all your life to pick up Mjolnir and never be able to do it. Mm-hmm. But or sometimes you think of something, you have a revelation, you do something that you were afraid of doing, and your perspective of life changes, and you are never the same. And maybe you are able to lift like the heaviest weight. And I think that is being worthy, not really needing to not looking to always raise that hammer. You will raise the hammer, you will pick it up and raise it when you least try it, mm-hmm. when you least expect it. Sometimes you lift 10 Mjolnirs and you don't even know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You don't even know that you're lifting that way. Mm. And you never know when that moment is coming. You might need to lift, a friend, a co-worker, your wife, your kids. You might need to be worthy for them in specific times. And you're just a regular human, a Midgardian. I don't know. Maybe there are Midgardians out there that are able to lift Mjolnir and be worthy, and we just don't know them because we're looking at flashing devices and you know billionaires who are playing with social media and destroying stuff. And there's people out there who are really worthy of Mjolnir and much much more stuff, and we just don't see them. They are invisible.
100%. And I love that outlook so much. And I had to ask you because, like I said, I'm under the belief of anyone can be worthy. Every one of us can be worthy given the circumstance and, you know, the need for worthiness, right? And again, something that I get in kind of spats about a lot within like the Thor community and just comics in general is that idea of like, oh, not just Thor can be worthy. Like, again, Jane Foster, when like she is worthy, Beta Ray Bill, he is worthy. He is worthy to possess the power of Thor, which like, yes, Thor is his name, but the power of Thor is something we can all strive to. So like I said, as someone who is drawn 5 Thors technically in the last issue, I thought you'd have a pretty good perspective on that.
I mean, I don't know. That's I like philosophy a lot. So I don't know. I'm not an expert in Thor's lore. So what I can give is my opinion on what the character you know is supposed to be, or because again, if you don't relate to the characters and you don't find human elements of the characters, then what are you doing reading them?
Yeah,
you're reading about characters that you can't relate to them. It's like the number one aspect of comics that people find interesting is actually the ability to relate to them and relate to the characters and what they go through. If you are completely detached and nothing on those stories talk about you and what things you are going through in life, then what are you even, why are you even reading them in the first place?
Yeah.
You know, like if you enjoy art, you're supposed to interpret and feel it, you know, in your bones and feel it in your mind and in your head, in your heart. If it doesn't work and you're just seeing powerful beings like tearing each other apart and punching and, you know, That's like trying to learn something from a kid who is playing with toys and just smashing them together. Like, yeah, those are characters. Yeah, they are super powerful and whatever. Like, the same happens with mythology in general. Mm-hmm. Like, mythology explains life. Mythology tries to explain what people are going through. You know, if you make a sterile mythology that don't speak of people and just you can't relate to it and there's nothing to be gained from reading it, then why would I read it in the first place? So, yeah.
Yeah, 100%, man. Like I said, you're just killing it today with the whole with every question, man. You're just absolutely killing it. Again, one of the reasons why I don't just love your work, but you're just such a cool and awesome guy. And I mean, I wish I could have you here for 4 hours because there's so much more that I would love to talk to you about and get to. But we got to wrap this up. You have so much more Thor to be drawn for us and everything, but really quickly, we just had the last issue of Immortal Thor for this year. So I gotta ask, I know I don't want you to spoil anything, and I know you wouldn't and couldn't even if you wanted to, but I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask you about the future of Immortal Thor. Is there anything that you can give us about what we can look forward to or anything about what's coming next year, or just how you feel about it maybe?
I think it's going places. I think it's an exploration, like Al is doing an exploration of the character and the lore and the mythology, mm-hmm. and rewriting stuff or making callbacks or even Easter eggs here and there. But I and this is true, I don't know I'm only a few issues ahead, but I'm mm-hmm. not that ahead, so I don't really know where it's going. I don't know what the ultimate game is. I don't really know, and I don't know if Al knows it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But all I can say is that it's super entertaining, like super entertaining. The stories are powerful and are Al is a master. That, mm-hmm. like he has a way of catching you and really you in, and he can go from super epic stuff to super intimate stories. He's a master. Yeah. and he's paying a lot of respect to those who came before him. So all I can say is just sit back and enjoy.
Enjoy the ride. Like you said, a lot of the time we're in the same boat together. But let me ask you this again. I wouldn't be doing my job. I had to ask you for something. But let me ask you this. So we were talking a little bit ago, and you were telling me that issue 5 had some of your favorite pages that you've done in the series so far. Is that still true?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That answers that to me. That's enough.
that doesn't mean that things I did after that issue that those things are not good. There's a lot of great stuff because Al when you get these pages of script and they are so interesting and they go go to stuff. I can't talk.
I'm going to cut you off right here, so I don't want to get into trouble.
it goes places. Mm-hmm. It's just incredibly fun to put those stories together.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue 5 is like extremely powerful. Like I enjoyed so much. So all the prologue pages and then the fight with Thoranos and what comes later. It's like page after page after page. It was so intense. It took a lot of work. Like
I can only imagine.
I was busy. I was super busy doing those splash pages and double page spreads and you name it. Like it has it. Like it has everything that issue. And it's super epic. It's an anthology. It's an origin stories of gods and creatures and I don't know, man. It's just it was incredible.
Yeah.
So after that, I also like really enjoyed what comes later. But
something special about number five
was like super iconic, mm-hmm.
Definitely translates into reading. It was my favorite issue, at least so far. And I mean, going back to just tipping my hat off to you, what you were able to accomplish within the confines of, whatever 22, 21 pages, is just, it's absolutely mind-blowing. And I, again, I just can't thank you enough for doing this and coming and spending some time with me to talk all about it. You're one of my favorite artists, and like, I look up to you so much. So again, just thank you so much for taking this time. I know I've kept you even longer than I should have already. So unfortunately, we have to wrap this up. But again, man, just you and Al, and I got to shout out Matt Wilson too. Like,
yeah,
the whole creative team behind the book is just firing on all cylinders. I think I can speak for the whole Immortal Corpse out there, the whole Thor family, that we are absolutely loving this book. I cannot wait to see where we are going to go from here. And again, man, I just can't thank you for coming and spending this time with us today.
I mean, time flies. Like
it yeah. was
like real fun. Like I would go on, but I have a
you
daughter.
Got,
and
I say you to, got all these yeah. great books to draw, man. We're yeah. talking about how I'm so excited to see no, what comes next. I gotta let you go so you can get to it.
and I have a family to go to and
yeah.
and spend time with them, because sometimes drawing comics is. Like it's exhausting and it takes forever. So it's always good to go back to your family and your kids and life is about that, actually, not comics. So
yeah, it's about balance.
We should just relax a little about comics and understand that they are supposed to be fun, but we should have a life outside of comics and just try to be happy and try to have empathy with everyone around us, and just that's it, man. The more empathy you have, the happier you live. So yeah. Mm.
I love it, Martin. I can't think of a better message to end this interview on. And I mean, what else can I say besides everyone out there watching, listening to this, go run to your comic shop, pick up Immortal Thor #5, pick up issues 1, 2, 3, and 4 too while you're there. I guarantee you that you will absolutely not only love the story, but the art is going to blow you away. So go out there, go support this book. Martin, thank you so much for being here again. Hopefully we can do this again in a couple more yeah. issues and kind of reconvene of where we're at. But as far as that goes, that's going to be all we have for you guys today. Thank you so much for watching and listening to this. If you guys enjoyed this video, please consider giving us a like and subscribe. Also, don't forget that during the holiday season, we have partnered with the great folks at Children's Hospital Los Angeles to put on the fundraiser Comics for a Clause, which is to get comics into the hands of patients over at the Children's Hospital here in Los Angeles. So if you guys are able, please consider donating or checking out our Amazon wish list. All those links are going to be in the description below. And once again, thank you everybody for watching. I hope that you guys have a fantastic day. Stay hydrated. Hope your stacks are fat, and we will see you all next time.
I'm going to do this all day.